Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and this episode, episode number 13, has returning guest Kevin Dungeon Musings Madison and brand new guest, Knight Errant Jared Rasher. How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Pretty good.
Are those cool? Are you guys fine with those nicknames then? Because it seems like some people on the community are complaining about the ones Chris gave them.
I've had that Knight Errant handle forever, and I've just kind of transitioned to using my actual name, so that is perfectly okay.
I had, like, way back in the day when ICQ was a thing, I had Bad Mutterfugger as my handle.
You're that guy.
I had that for, like, every video game system I had for years and years, so I'll take Dungeon Musing over that.
I'm not sure why. I mean, you could have copyrighted the other one, and you'd be going pretty good.
I know we don't know each other that well, but I think I clearly don't strike you as a bad motherfucker.
All right, so I guess for the listeners, we should say something about you. So Kevin has his own you do like actual plays, and apparently you're doing reviews now on your vlog, right?
I stumbled into one review on the Dungeon Musings YouTube channel. I do a lot of actual play sessions playing a bunch of different games. And then I did my first review, yesterday and posted it. But that was really in response to someone had a question about a game that I had run, the Champions Complete, published by Hero, the Hero Games. So I tried that. I will see about doing future things. And unless I've got something, you know, useful to add, about a product, I don't really want to be doing just, you know, I bought it, I read it, and then say what I think about it. I'd sooner see actual play. But yeah, I do lots of different games on there.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Jared, you are the what do I know about guy, right? You want to say something about that stuff?
Well, I a long time ago, back when it first came out, I did a series of actual play videos for Marvel Heroic. I kind of wanted to do another series of videos, so we did Shadow of the Demon Lord this time. And the title, the what do I know, comes from my blog title. I do lots of random topics. I do a lot of reviews. And the reason it's called What Do I Know is because in no way do I ever want anyone to think I'm an expert at anything. That's a disclaimer right up front. You know more than me, most likely, if you're reading this blog.
I mean, I never want to be an expert on anything either, because then I have responsibilities. And I mean, I just kind of shirk those whenever possible. All right. So like last time Kevin was on, I don't know, I think it was episode 9 or so, we talked about how we knew each other, and it was actually Jared that introduced us, because Jared was searching for players for this Shadow of the Demon Lord game. You want to talk about how you did that, Jared?
Basically, I just canvassed a bunch of different Google Plus communities. There's lots of gamers there. That's the only reason I've used the platform. And I just fished around until I found some people. And a lot of that's because it's the same feeling that I get about conventions. I like playing with some people that are familiar, but I also like playing with people I've never played with before, because I want to get a wider perspective on things, and Google Plus is a really good venue to find a bunch of new people.
That's pretty interesting, because some people call Google Plus more of an echo chamber because of the way, you know, you can filter your circles or whatever.
You know, when it comes to gaming, because a lot of the interactions that I have with people are through communities, I think it can be if you're reading your own feed and filtering out what you're seeing in your own feed, but more and more, I've been actually going into communities to have discussions, and that, you know, each community is going to have its own personality and its own feel to it. So,
yeah, I think that's true. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, right now the community I'm most involved with is the Conan community for the Modiphius one. There's plenty of healthy, you know, discussion that's going on there that aren't just echoing the same opinions about things. I think partly that's because it's quite a new game. So there's still a lot of people sorting out, what do you do with this game? Like, what are the rules? How do they play at the table and whatnot? But there's certainly a lot of active disagreement on that. I mean, in a friendly and healthy way. But it's not just, you know, reinforcing what, you know, someone else had to say. That said, the Hero Games community is very much just, you know, kind of an echo chamber. So I can see where there's, you know, it depends on the community itself, how big it is, and I guess how new it is as well.
Yeah.
Would dictate how, you know, how much there's useful back and forth from new voices.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the community I hang out the most at is the Hobbs and Friends community. And I mean, I hang out at Gaming and BS and Misdirected Mark podcast, but mm-hmm. I don't really know, I guess. I'm usually just me babbling to no one, and then sometimes people respond, but that's about it.
Story of my life.
Talking about Hero Games, before Google Plus, I spent a lot of time on the actual Hero Games forum right around the time that 5th edition came out for that system. So I'm very familiar with that. So it's interesting to me to hear you talking about Champions Complete for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played that before, Jared?
I have not. I had a friend of mine that was very, very into Hero Games. And around the time 6th edition came out, because I've always been aware of it, because I've been gaming since 1985. I just never got into it. I tried reading the 6th edition books, not the Champions books, but the actual Hero System books. And it was very much like trying to read a textbook for me, and I could not make it through.
I believe it.
Even a seasoned pro, that's exactly what it's like, too.
I actually have a lot to say about OSR superhero genre and the games that came out and maybe what they've shifted to. But Rick Hull actually sent me an email that I'm not going to read. I'm just going to say he was curious about that because we've touched a lot of other genres in the OSR, but we haven't touched that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually played a little bit of Villains and Vigilantes last night with the original first edition, and that's actually pretty damn crunchy itself. So,
is that the one where you play yourself as a superhero?
Yeah. Yep. That's what you start off as. Yeah. So, all right, I'm not going to get into that too much because that'll be a future episode. So let's segue directly into like what games we've been playing. So during Free RPG Day, which was just on Saturday, a few days ago, right? I had a little con at my house where a couple of my gaming buddies came and actually stayed overnight, which is why I missed Shadow of the Demon Lord game Saturday morning, is because all those assholes were still here.
You find Denver out of our hearts. 1v4 damage there, Hobbs. What the what?
I mean, how often do you get 450-something-year-old dudes all having an overnight gaming, all night drinking, and then getting up the next morning to play?
Yeah. So,
that night we actually played Fury of Dracula, the board game, which I'd never played before. But it was fun. And then the next morning we played... I play-tested an adventure, a Weird West DCC adventure by Stephen Newton and Thick Skull Adventures. So I was asked not to say anything about that game. But I've also played Villains and Vigilantes, some 5e with Chris Snezak, and then we've been playing the heck out of Classic Battletech on Roll20 lately.
Ugh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, it's the legit, the old boards, you know, all the facing and the heat sinks and marking off your armor and all that. And I know nothing about it. I'm like the biggest neophyte with the guys I'm playing with. But he's actually creating the entire campaign randomly through the books. Apparently, that's how it's done. Did you know that or no?
Yeah. Depending on what edition he's going with, there's the last 10 years of products, they've been pumping out these different ways of running kind of like streamlined campaign rules. And they also published more complicated campaign rules more recently as well, too. So depending on what he's working with, there's all sorts of cool, you know, things that's happening behind the scenes that you're not aware of.
He talks about it some, but I'm pretty sure it's the old one. So
okay, cool.
I got you on the list next, Kevin. What do you got for us?
Speaking of all-day things, so every year for my birthday, I usually pick a game that I haven't run usually or recently or that I haven't run in a while. To run for my friends because I make a road trip to get back to go back home. And what we did this year was Conan. We did a full day thing of Conan, and it was awesome. We played from like 11 till about 2 or 3 in the morning, and we got through 2 full adventures. And it's the same group of guys that I play with for my Friday night Star Wars Fantasy Flight campaign. And we actually all enjoyed it so much that we're actually putting Star Wars on hiatus. We'd finished up season 2 of that, so it was a good point to break, but we're going to play Conan for the foreseeable future. And I'm very much in love with that game. It's really, really fun. It's very evocative of the source material, and it's got, yeah, it just feels like a very pulpy game. I also ran Cypher System last week, which was a lot of fun to revisit that again, because it's interesting to run something where I'm never really touching dice. So I enjoyed that. And then I've got Tomorrow is My Shadow of the Demon Lord game. And actually, I played X-Wing, the miniature game, for the first time on the weekend. First off, I suck at it. Apparently, like, I cannot read my friends for shit. But The game is really a lot of fun. The miniatures are super cool. The game is very, very quick. Like, we got done two games in about 2.5 hours. And that's what, like, learning the rules and whatnot, too. So
that's good.
Yeah, that's me.
Nice. Jared?
Well, the last couple Saturdays, I've been running my Shadow of the Demon Lord game, and we wrapped it up, but we'll talk about that later. Thursdays, I have my Storm King's Thunder, my D&D group, and that's briefly on hiatus for about a month, but we played last week. And the free RPG day Saturday, I played in a demo of the Dragon Age RPG, which I've been wanting to do for a while. And then just this last Saturday, I was one of the patron guests for the Tales of the Heidi and Way podcast, playing Edge of the Empire in a one-shot.
Cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So in the future, I think Kevin needs to run Conan for us, and then we'll do a podcast.
Oh, my God. You know, I forgot to say, so for Free RPG Day was actually the day that we wrapped up Jared's Shadow of the Demon Lord campaign. And I was saying to the guys before we went live that actually I didn't sleep the night before, so I was pretty brain dead by the end of it. And then I didn't go to my store till quite later. I took a nap, and then I went in later. And the friend I've got there wasn't there, so I didn't get the Conan book. So I was like, oh, I was a little bummed out. I actually picked up DCC to sort of, you know, soothe that pain. But then when I went there later in the week, my friend was there, and he had saved me a copy of the Conan one.
Oh, nice.
So awesome. So I'm thrilled. It's a little one-shot, and if we do get to do that, I will absolutely try and kill you guys. I mean, give you guys a terrific time playing Conan.
I would definitely love to try it.
Sweet.
All right, so do you have anything else to say, Jared, before we move on to Everything About You?
No, I'm good.
All right, so Everything About You, it's a segment of the podcast where I tell the listeners something about myself, and hopefully the guests can as well, that they may not already know. All right, so as anyone who actually played a game with me, I'm really terrible at reading rules. All right, so if all I have is the PDF, I'm garbage. So I have to usually go out and buy the rule books, and even then, I'm only reading probably what I need as a character. And if I'm running the game, I hopefully have two or three other experts that I can just say, hey, you know that rule, what's going on, you know? And that's pretty much me. So what do you got, Jared?
Let's see. Most people probably don't know anything about me, but I'll throw this out there. My earliest memory of all time when I was a wee tyke is seeing Godzilla on television.
All right.
My first, absolute first memory.
Is that a happy memory or a traumatizing memory?
I don't know. I mean, I turned out this way. I don't know.
So when the Japanese people see the kaiju or Godzilla come out, what do they yell? Doesn't they yell like Diddy Mao when they all run away? You know what I'm talking about?
See, I remember seeing Godzilla, and I remember it was black and white. You're asking for a lot here to go beyond that.
isn't Diddy Mao Vietnamese?
Maybe it is. Maybe I got it confused with some Vietnam show. I don't know. Mm. I always say that, though, when I'm ready to leave somewhere. I always like, let's Diddy Mao. All right, Kevin, you got something?
Well, this is something that probably anyone who's tuned into my podcast knows, but I have a very lovely dog, and she is a pit bull boxer cross, and she's a rescue pup, so she's got a little bit of behavioral issues, but she's quite clever, and she knows when we're about to go live with any kind of recording. We'll find this one squeaky toy that she hasn't torn apart and bring it right next to the computer and start chewing on it immediately after we start recording, so...
Yeah, she did that today. That's pretty cool. All right, that's awesome. So let's move on to the game of the week, which obviously when Kevin and I talked about Shadow the Demon Lord last time, I mentioned that we should actually bring the GM Jared on and talk about Shadow the Demon Lord and how it all wrapped up and how we felt about it. So just to revisit, Shadow the Demon Lords by Robert Schwab, a very well-known author in the gaming industry. It's produced by Schwab Entertainment, which makes sense. Jared was our GM, and it was an actual play videos that he put on his blog or on a YouTube channel, right? Called What Do I Know About Videos? Is that what it is, or what is it?
Yeah, although, if you look up my name, it'll bring up the videos.
All right, so Jared Rasher, if you actually want to watch us. And not always me, because I was horrible at making sessions, but... if you want to watch us play this Shadow the Demon Lord game, you can see all of our lovely faces as we watch what Mike Mylar does with his crazy-ass fringe character. So.
Did you notice that, like, for like 45, well, within a couple hours of after the session wrapped, he posted a whole thing about Fringe?
Yes.
It was pretty cool to see his vision of that, you know, just to see his perspective about that character.
Totally, yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. Oh, and also, I'm going to, on the show notes or somehow, I'm going to share the awesome picture that Kevin drew of all of our characters that, obviously, I'm all I care about is my character. So, and he did an awesome, he did an awesome job of capturing his look of how he felt about everyone else in the room.
I'm glad you guys enjoyed.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right. So, does you guys, either of you have anything you want to say about like an introduction to the game or anything?
I've already given my like 2 cents. What made you decide to run this thing?
That's a good question.
Oh, I wanted to run this thing because, for one thing, I had invested quite a bit in it. I went seriously in on the Kickstarter, and at the time, it ticked all the boxes that I was looking for at that particular point in time. This was actually pre-seeing what 5th edition was going to look like, so I was like, I will never play D&D again. I was wrong about that, by the way. But that's what I was thinking in one hand. The other hand was I had just gotten finished running Dungeon Crawl Classics, which, disclaimer, I love Dungeon Crawl Classics. The group I was playing with, because Dungeon Crawl Classics tends to be a bit over the top, they said, hey, if this is already over the top, what would happen if we applied even more over the top to it? And we would literally have sessions where there was people murdering brand new party members continually just so we could see people generate more zero-level characters. And it was sort of fun, and I could have put my foot down, but it was like, you know what? The tone is what it is. But Shadow of the Demon Lord felt like it was doing some of that. You're starting off as zero-level characters. It's a dark setting. There's weird things going on. But it didn't quite have the Gonzo. You can make it Gonzo. There's humor in it, but it's not quite as over-the-top as Dungeon Crawl Classics. So I really wanted to jump in on that.
I can see that.
And I ran some one-shots, zero-level one-shots, at the local convention, Winter War, in Champaign. And I really enjoyed how it was going. But that I only got to run those zero level ones. And I told myself, I am going to run this game and I'm going to run it as it's designed to run a campaign from zero level all the way up to 10th level. And I want to see how this thing looks from beginning to end. And that's really what motivated this.
So how did it look?
It looked like I messed up a lot of stuff, but you know, that happens the first time you run things.
Yeah. No matter what game anybody runs, it's kind of like that, I think.
I really enjoyed the game. I really like how it... I don't feel like it scaled poorly. You know, some things that are level-based, they get really top-heavy towards the end, and either you're having to completely throw everything out the window and have gods try and eat people, or else, you know, it just falls apart. And I think the scale kind of held together fairly well. I'm pretty happy with it. I really liked how it unfolded. I like the way it's structured. I think you can definitely get a feel for the different tiers as you're playing. That, you know, there is that kind of, it's a growth, but it's not the kind of growth that you feel in D&D. So it was definitely a unique feeling. Overall, I was pretty happy, but I kind of want to bounce off you guys a little bit more so I can give some details instead of just kind of generally saying, it was great. Yeah.
Go ahead, Kevin.
One of the things we were talking about last time is how the characters don't feel like in D&D, your characters from like first level to 12th level are fundamentally different characters. Like they're occupying different worlds and they're able to do completely different capabilities. That doesn't seem to be the case with Shadow the Demon Lord. You're tougher and you're able to, you've got more tricks in your bag of tricks, but you're not like occupying a demigod land the way you sort of do in Pathfinder or D&D or whatever.
Yeah. There's some linear progression to your skills, but there's a lot of broader progression to your skills, too, where you have more tricks. Some of your tricks get a little bit more potent, but it's not all just your tricks getting more potent. It's you getting a wider range of things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that, I think, is that Boon Bane mechanic, because you can only get up to 3 one way or the other, so you're not really getting that much more powerful, really. You think that's true?
The thing is, you're only taking the highest of either role. So, I mean, you're only looking at a 6-point swing one direction or the other. And it does with that dice mechanic a lot of what 5th edition does with its bounded accuracy. It keeps everything within a certain range. You're not starting suddenly having oh, now the DC for this is 48. You know, your bonuses get to these ridiculous numbers. It's a lot more contained.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. So, I mean, it sounds like Jared agrees with you and I, Kevin, is that the breadth of the character growth is more apparent as opposed to just like exactly what you said. Top heavy is what characters can become. I mean, in the 5e game that I'm playing with Chris, it's we're just going through Dead and Fae, the Doom Vaults, and so we're playing ninth level characters, which I've really never done before. Mm-hmm. And my ninth level character in 5e is crazy more powerful than Kane was in Shadow of the Demon Lord. You know, it's
what class are you playing?
A sorcerer.
Oh,
my character was actually I didn't really know what to make, and so I just asked for the community at Hobbs and Friends to come up with a character for me, and Jared was pretty heavily involved with that, and Matt Jackson. So
is that the statue of the woman that you've been posting?
Yes.
Right. Oh, okay. Badass. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's her. She wears a mask, and that's a mask that she has on. So that's the thing. And I mean, Chris has really been using some of the angles that Jared and Matt put in there, so it's pretty fun to play. So
I'm glad I can upgrade your character.
Yeah, you did, and it was great. I didn't know what to do, and I'm more than happy to play whatever. So that worked out pretty good.
From what I understand about Dead and Fae, too, it's not like they'll be around for all that long anyway. So
that's what we're told. But the last session, we killed a Behur, and my character intimidated an Aboleth out of this key that he had. So
wow.
It worked out pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So at the higher levels now, were there any rules that came in or mechanics that came into play that we didn't talk about previously? Kevin, I'll ask you since, I mean, I'm sure Jared listened to the episode because he's a huge fan, but what did you think, Kevin?
One thing that came in, I haven't had this come up in my Shadow of the Demon Lord game because I think we're at like sixth level right now, or my players are at sixth level. The extra attacks or the extra actions that characters get, from what I understand, Rob Schwab worked on fifth edition as well. He was part of the fifth edition design team, so he would have been exposed to a lot of the ideas that they used in that. And the fifth edition equivalent of that is legendary actions, right?
Yeah.
And legendary actions are keyed to how many party members you have in the group, right? Like it's a way of sort of self-balancing so that if you've got a group of five and three of them are down, that creature is only going to trigger two legendary actions. It's not going to keep getting five.
Actually, the way it works is that the legendary actions usually, there's three of them and they trigger after someone else's turn.
Exactly. So the number of legendary actions you're getting are only going to trigger after someone's turn. So, I guess if the character's down, they're going to still technically have a turn, so maybe they will still. But anyway, I guess I was not crazy about the random amount of turns that enemies get in every turn. Like the Lich we fought had that, and the last two baddies that we fought had that feature. And when you think like everything else in the combat mechanics and stuff like that worked really, really well and didn't feel arbitrary and didn't feel like arbitrarily punishing. That did feel that way. It felt like in the way that sometimes, like, and I don't mean to shit on old school role playing, but the arbitrarily punishing stuff that doesn't have really a story component to it or whatever, I just didn't dig on that component. That could just be sour grapes from a player who kept getting hit, you know, with each of those actions. But I wasn't crazy about that, and I really wish they had done something closer to the legendary actions.
Yeah, see, I like the legendary actions in D&D, and there's also a thing in optional rules in like the Star Wars RPG where like Nemesis might get an extra turn at the end of the round. I like that because it does solve the action economy thing when you're trying to have a boss fight. But I do kind of agree. It's weird that you roll for how many, because if you roll for five, it's like this opponent could really, really wreck your party. And it seems like maybe just saying, okay, yeah, you get three, you know, just so that there's actually a set thing. A legendary creature has three of these things. It was a little odd that it's a random number.
That does sound interesting. I mean, obviously I'm an OSR guy, and the random punishment that you mentioned, I don't really know if my games are like that, honestly. In some ways they are, because it's like, oh, if you're here for three rounds, then even in the zine that I wrote, there's like an aspect of that. If you do this for three rounds, then something's going to happen to someone randomly determined. So I guess maybe I do. So in your eye, Kevin.
You know, and on reflection, like at the time it wasn't a lot of fun, but also those last two sessions, like my dice were on fire for pretty much every game, every session we played until the last two. And then I could not roll a number over five to save my life.
I felt sorry because Kevin's character, he went down so many times in those last two sessions.
Which is what his job was, right? He never really got a chance to do that until those last two sessions.
Oh, man.
Reflection after the Lich fight, though, I was thinking about it. And, like, if the Lich is supposed to be this, like, pinnacle of unholy and necromantic magical power, that is absolutely how that fight felt.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone else wasn't going, like, it was just me going down, so that wasn't, you know, it was playing out the way it should be. And thank God we had a good healer as well. But, so yeah, so I mean, I guess the Lich thing, I think, did work out really well, and it gave him a chance to chain a lot of those spells that he wouldn't otherwise have had a chance to do.
Right.
So I'm willing to give that a pass. I don't know. I think that having extra actions is a good thing. I didn't really care for the randomness of it, though.
I totally understand. I think it might even be something I would play with if I did it again, to just assign it to three.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's good. That's anything else that we didn't have a chance to talk about mechanic-wise for Shadow of the Demon Lord?
The end-of-game abilities that you get at level 10. Yep, we haven't had a chance to talk about those, I guess. And they're pretty freaking cool. Like, I got my character was a Jotun Ranger Skald. So I was, you know, we joked that I was like the darkened version of Tom Bombadil. So I ran around through the woods singing. But my final tier ability was this cool thing to make people immune to fear. So I could sing a little ditty, and then for the rest of the day, people wouldn't get scared anymore. Which in a game that's a horror fantasy game is a really huge advantage, because it, you know, stopped us from gaining more insanity and from suffering banes from that. And I think everyone had a similarly really kind of cool signature move that they got at 10th level.
Ryan's elf was a Morrigan, which in the system is basically a fey creature that punishes other beings that have caused harm to the fey. And his signature ability was, instead of moving from one place to another, he turned into a flock of crows and reformed every time.
He was so nonplussed about that, too. Yeah. Why does everyone else get cool shit? I just turn into birds. So maybe I stand corrected. I may have to retract that.
That's pretty good, though. Couldn't happen to a better guy. Oh, I'm just kidding, Ryan.
You know, one thing I'll say, too, Jared, you did a really, really good job of letting everyone sort of, like, trusting your players to tie it back together. Because in the group, we had a bunch of us who were sort of all, you know, along with the sort of group goal. But Widow's Cry and Fringe had very distinctively different goals in mind. And it was great that you were very hands-off with that, because neither of the guys kind of screwed us over. Like, the story resolved in a really fun and cohesive kind of way at the end.
Yeah, I tried to do a lot of, I don't like doing heavy-handed, you shouldn't do that, or this is the way the campaign should go. And I do think maybe at the beginning I probably should have provided a little bit more thought process on, you know, getting everybody on the same page. But at the same time, once people start going in different directions, is the way I've always liked to run things, especially when I'm designing the adventures myself. I like to do micro adjustments where it's like, you do exactly what you want to do. I don't care how crazy it is. I will start to slightly adjust what I'm doing and slightly nudge you in certain directions. And hopefully by the end of the story, we reconverged at a point that made sense.
Yeah.
And I definitely felt that.
It's a credit to the players as well, too, because, like, Ryan and game, you know, I've had a conversation with friends before about this, how, like, gaming is a team sport, right? Like, we're all in this thing together, and, like, the DM is presenting the, you know, the scenario for us and is, you know, acting as referee. But players have an obligation to, you know, to a degree, to ensure that everyone else is having fun, or at the very least, not stepping on other people's fun in the course of playing it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And it was really cool seeing two characters who had very distinctive voices in the group who still ended up having a really fun, you know, contributing a really fun, oblique kind of way to the story.
Yeah, I think that was great. And I've mentioned that to Jared before, but it's nice to actually give it to him in this public venue. So good job, Kevin. All right. I'm always curious about the creation process. So you're saying you made a lot of it on your own. Mm-hmm. Like, how difficult or what? I guess I haven't read the book, believe it or not. But how difficult was it? You know, planning, I guess, that, because, I mean, obviously you want as much player agency as you can get, but you're still kind of planning for 10 sessions or 11 sessions, right? So
a lot of times I know where I want a campaign to start, and I'll present that to people. I kind of know what's going to happen at the end of it, and if you happen to get to that point, that's awesome. I don't like to fill out a lot of the stuff in between until I start getting stuff from the players, until I start seeing, you know, what they're interested in and what hooks they grab. So really, at lower levels, I want there to be a bunch of hooks for people and to see which direction they're interested in going, and then I kind of flesh things out in that direction. So hopefully, I don't know if it came across, hopefully it came across, that there was a lot you guys could latch onto. There was a lot, like, in the middle, it could have gone a lot of different directions. The end was sort of going to be similar one way or the other, but how you got there could have been radically different.
Mm-hmm.
And how successful that we could be, depending on which way we went, I could see
yes,
that.
Yes, indeed. There are worse options you guys could have taken. There were definitely better options you
Whoops.
It all came out in the watch.
Yeah.
We managed to lose a good percentage of the population of Earth.
That's all right. They probably weren't great people anyway. You know, you mentioned mechanics that you touched on last time, and I know you two had mentioned about the actual Shadow of the Demon Lord campaign structure that they put in the books, mm-hmm. which is, you don't have to use this, but in general, they have these campaign frameworks, which is sort of like, this is how the world is going to end, and this is what's going to happen in the novice tier, and this is what's going to happen in the expert tier, in really broad strokes to kind of tell the PCs that, yes, things are getting worse. And I know you guys had mentioned you weren't sure if I had made up my own or if I had taken one from the books. And what I started off doing was using, there's a Fall of Civilization one, which is basically just, hey, civilization keeps getting worse, there's warfare, there's strife, there's all the countries have fallen into civil war. Everything's just complete crap until the very end. And if people don't stop it, then the whole world just devolves into bloodshed and warfare. And then the world ends because everything's terrible. And the problem is, Kevin touched on this. That particular one is very hard to actually give the PCs a win condition in, because you basically have to make the world less of a terrible place. And that's kind of making the world less of a terrible place. I added a little bit of an extra element where there is literally this thing, which was the troll, that was gathering all of the negative vibes from civilization falling apart so that you actually had a literal focal point that you could rail against.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my thought process on that one.
All right, so let's wrap this up. So does anyone have one favorite thing that they want to talk about the campaign, I guess? Jared, you had something on the notes here. Do you want to mention it?
It may just be me, but in the middle of the whole campaign, I enjoyed the whole campaign, but I really liked how that session when you guys infiltrated the Noble's Mansion went.
The Eyes Wide Shut one?
Yeah, basically. I don't know why, but for some reason I just really enjoyed that. And I think it's because Fringe went off completely on her own. You guys went and did your investigation, and it didn't feel like things came to a dead stop, even though you guys were divided. And I just really like how that kept bouncing back and forth.
You know, we were saying the last podcast too. That's one thing I mean, or maybe we were, maybe it was someone else I was talking to, but we're talking to myself or my dog. But one of the things I loved about Mike's role playing in that scene too was that, like, as much he was being very, very true to that character, he, like, when I can't remember who it was, said, "No, I think there's chicken tracks down there." And he was like, "Okay." And then came downstairs. He was like, "All right, I'll buy into that. You figured the way to get me to do what you want me to do." And then when it became apparent that there weren't any chicken tracks down there, then he's like, "Nope, no chickens down here." And went off on his own again.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I agree. Do you have any favorite moments or anything that you want to say, Kevin?
Yeah, I do. You know what? My favorite moment was, like, it was cool how on board Steve was with setting up kind of a connection between Vigdis and Abby right from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, and that, because that, like, I mean, I, when I'm DMing stuff, that's what I kind of like to do anyway. So I just tried to find some way to make it us versus them right away.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite moment from the entire campaign is the moment when both me and Vigdis at the same time realized, like, no, Abby can't become the stranger. Because honestly, like, I saw it as like, oh, well, it's going to be some kind of magic-y thing that one of the magic users will actually like. And then when it became apparent that she would be trapped there, it just sort of all came in together. I'm like, this is bullshit. Like, she was trapped in the brothel before, and she finally got the freedom to go and become her, you know, become a witch and have her coven and whatever else too. And it was just one of, I love that kind of emergent character moment.
Yeah, that moment, really, there was no way you can plan for something like that. That was just something that you guys just kind of grabbed and ran with, and that scene came together beautifully.
Yeah, which made the coda. I'm sorry for forcing that coda on you as well, too. I love that idea. And then having the other like immortal characters show up as well.
Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
Oh, dang. Now I might have to actually watch this on video because I didn't see that.
Your character was in the after credit scene.
You do show up.
All right. So that's awesome. So we really did enjoy Shadow of the Demon Lord, and I appreciate you running that for us, Jared. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you guys for playing. I had a lot of fun running for you guys.
So we're not wrapping up the episode yet. Jared had the idea of mentioning the Purple Sorcerer is a website that John Marr runs, and it's an app, the crawler that you can use for Dungeon Crawl Classics. And in many ways, you can run the game straight off of that. If that's all you had and that's all the players had, you could probably run DCC with it. He's running a fundraiser for it right now, and you can check it out. I'll have a link in the show notes, and it's going for 5 days, 4 hours, 12 minutes, and 27 seconds from now on. So if you ever use it and you feel like you want to give something out, that's a perfect product spotlight. So it's all obviously just, it's a fundraiser. So if you want to give to it, give to it. If you don't, don't. But we appreciate, Mr. Marr for, doing that. Cause I've used it myself many, many times, especially at cons.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. DCC book is heavy as hell. All right. So State of the OSR, briefly, I wanted to mention, have you guys heard of these, you know, like Myth Horde or RPG Crate? Either you guys heard of them?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So basically, it's like a subscription that you monthly get, and you pay $30 or $40 a month, whichever one you're doing, and then you get this stuff, and the RPG has them. So like the one I usually people talk about is Loot Crate, where like, you know, you're getting, you know, bobbleheads or different things from Fallout or whatever, and you never know what they're going to be, but you pay your subscription every month, and then you get this box that you get cool shit in. So the RPG industry has two right now that I know of, RPG Crate and Myth Horde. And the same people who own Myth Horde Illusion have asked Eric from Tenkar's Tavern to basically handpick or, I don't know, gatekeep or whatever should go into this new OSR crate. Have you guys heard of this or not?
Yes, I have.
What about you, Kevin?
I hadn't, but that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting, but as there always is, especially in the OSR, because it's a niche of a niche, and it's a more of a movement than it is anything that anyone can tie down in concrete terms. There was some blowback because in the blurb about the crate, Tenkar basically said he was the voice of the OSR, and so there was some hubbub about it. And because there's people have politics regardless, even if we're talking about games.
Hold on. Are you telling me that a niche fan group somehow got their nose out of joint about something? Come on.
I don't think they did. A true thing.
That is so unlike. I used to run a comic store years and years ago, and I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah, it's same kind of idea. Well, anyway, Eric Jensen actually did an interview with Tenkar and put it out for everybody. So if you have any interest in the crate or Tenkar or the OSR, you should actually go and find this interview. And Tenkar actually put it on Tenkar's Tavern. So it's pretty cool. And I think it kind of shook itself out after that. And I'm sure that there'll be more excitement about it later.
Is it a physical copy that's sent out or is it electronic?
Physical.
Physical. Oh, sweet. Wow.
Yeah, physical. So he's actually mentioned me. So I'm going to try and put some stuff in there. I'd like to get something monthly in there, but we'll see. So that's pretty exciting.
That is pretty.
So we're kind of running out of time, so I'm going to run through this, but don't act like Eric Hoffman and just stop listening though. Like he did last episode. But all right. So the OSR encounter contest that, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR was doing with, Gaming and BS is over, and we've picked the winners, and here they are. The runner up is Goblin's Henchman with his sweet, drill bit encounter. And the winner is my, fellow metal god, Gabriel Perez Gallardi.
Yay!
I don't know if you guys know Gabriel, but super cool guy. He lives in Spain. Not really. He lives in Uruguay, but I always say it's Spain because I'm kind of an asshole. But
Uruguay speak English as a primary language, though. That's a pretty significant difference.
So anyway, good job, Gabriel. Congratulations, and we'll figure out how to get those prizes to both of you guys. Good job. I mentioned last episode, I now have a website, Hobbs and Friends, Hobbs and Friends.com. I don't even know what the dang URL is now. But if you put in Hobbs and Friends, you'll find it with the letter N. And I've been toying with doing a blog, so I'm basically asking listeners if they have any thoughts or anything they want me to write about. Let me know, and maybe I'll do that. You guys have anything to say about blogs, since I know you have one, Jared? Are they awesome? Do they suck? What's the story?
It's a place where I spew things that I know are way too long for a normal post. That's about all I can say.
I like it. Well, people have been asking me about some content that went out in the zine and more information about it, so I thought that might be a good place to put it out there. I'd like to thank the three patrons shout-outs for this episode. Patrick Stevens, thanks. I don't really know why you are sending money to the patrons, since you already do art for the zine, but thanks, buddy. Garrett and Tony Hogard. So Garrett, I don't know, but Tony Hogard, I've met a couple times at North Texas. Super awesome guy, and he played a great luchador in David Beatty's Dark Trails game ran by Stokes, Craig Stokes. So, Jared, if anyone wants to ask you about how awesome this game was, how would they get in touch with you?
You can find me just by putting Jared Rasher in on Google+. I have a page for my blog on Facebook that's just What Do I Know. I also have What Do I Know is my Twitter handle, and the What Do I Know Games and Geekdom blog is on Blogger if you want to look it up online. And, of course, there's the YouTube channel, which is just under my name, Jared Rasher.
Nice. What about you, Kevin?
Best way to reach me, I have a blog, but I really don't use it all that much anymore. You can look for Dungeon Musings on YouTube, on Google+, or you can email me at dungeonmusings@gmail.com. That's usually the best way to get a hold of me. The YouTube channel is probably the best way to get to me.
Okay, nice. Just comment on some of your YouTubes or what?
Or, you know, that'll give you the email address, and you can just flip me an email or shoot me a message on Google+.
All right. So if you want to get in touch with me, you can get HobbsandFriends@MisdirectedMark.com is the email. I seem to be on Twitter a lot for some unknown reason. At Hobbs Indeed is my personal account, and then the podcast is at OSR and Hobbs. And if you want to be a patron like those three awesome dudes I mentioned earlier, you can go to Patreon.com/OSRNHobbs or... you should do what everybody else in the entire world should do, and that's go to the G+ community, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, which has 311 members now.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going to catch Misdirected Mark and Gaming and BS, and I think we're already way past Spellburn, Julian Burnick. you guys have any last words?
Thanks again for running the campaign for us too, Jared. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. I hope that we can game again together. So, lastly, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs. Good night.